Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. How They Rule.
Hello. You know, it's a frustrating and infuriating thing watching Clinton and his crew of nation wreckers gloating over their successful bullying of Serbia. Madeline has been screeching and squawking like the Wicked Witch of the West, and Bill has been wagging his finger at the Serbs, looking serious, and telling them that they will not get a cent to help them repair the damage done by NATO until they get rid of Slobodan Milosevic and choose an approved president. You know, I was pretty disappointed in Milosevic for caving in to the NATO gangsters, and I was about to write him off. I mean, what can you expect from a former communist? But if Clinton and his Jews hate Milosevic so much, then maybe there's something good about him after all. I remember how the Clinton gang a few years ago was applying pressure to Russia in every way it could to get Boris Yeltsin elected and then reelected. The message was essentially, no loans from the West unless Boris is your president. I've said this before, but it's a pretty good rule to remember, a rule which has been confirmed over and over again by events. If the Jews hate someone, then he can't be all bad. And anyone they praise in public needs to be shot as quickly as possible. Anyway, it's pretty much out in the open now how the New World Order gang intend to get control of things. They wreck a country with bombs and missiles, or they simply steal its wealth without using bombs and missiles. Then, when the country's people are sufficiently miserable and desperate, they hold out the offer of money for rebuilding if the people will elect the leaders chosen by the gangsters. That's what they call democracy, the will of the people, the will of the chosen people, that is. And, of course, it's our money, our hard-earned tax money, that's used for the bribes to subvert the democratic process in other people's countries. In Russia, they used communism and corruption, stealing, to bankrupt the country. And then when it was bled dry, they began clearing out for Israel and the United States. In Serbia, there were very few of the chosen people to start with, so they used bombs and missiles to wreck the country. Faster that way. They're even collecting subsidiary benefits from Russia and Ukraine now. An estimated 2,000 attractive young Russian and Ukrainian women every year are taken to Israel by the chosen people and forced into prostitution. That's not my estimate, by the way. The figure of 2,000 Russian and Ukrainian women a year comes from the Jerusalem Post. I'm reading now from a copy of the December 28, 1998 issue of the Jerusalem Post. Quote, women are sold into the sex business in Israel for between $5,000 and $15,000, while the pimps who buy them can earn between $10,000 and $50,000 a year per woman. According to the Israel Women's Network, 2,000 women are brought to Israel a year from the CIS and forced to work as prostitutes, end quote. CIS is an abbreviation for Commonwealth of Independent States, primarily Russia and Ukraine. You know, the Clinton government is full of humanitarians who justified their destruction of Serbia on the grounds that the Serbs were persecuting the Albanians in Serbia. When do you think these humanitarians will get around to doing something about the persecution of Russian and Ukrainian women in Israel? Did you know that it is legal to buy and sell human beings in Israel today? Non-Jewish human beings, that is. If the New World Order bribery is successful in Serbia, we'll lend you money for repairing the damage we did with our bombs and missiles if you get rid of Milosevic and choose the right president for your country, was the way Mr. Clinton so subtly put it on television the other day, if the New World Order gang get one of their creatures in to run Yugoslavia like they got Boris Yeltsin in to run Russia, then I expect that we'll see a steady stream of attractive young Serb women being smuggled out of Serbia while corrupt Serb officials look the other way, being taken to Israel and providing even more $50,000 a year per woman business opportunities for enterprising young Jewish businessmen that the Jerusalem Post can write about. You know, the wrecking crew did their job on America back in the 1960s. Actually, from the late 1950s through the mid-1970s, not with missiles and bombs, but just as effectively with television and the music industry and their influence in our universities. Among young people, they promoted marijuana and LSD and beads and long hair and the idea that the world owes us all a living and we owe respect to nothing. They gave us all sorts of new civil rights laws and affirmative action and wide open borders so that the wretched refuse of the third world's teeming shores could come flooding into America and shift our electoral demographics in a democratic direction. They taught us that gay is good and the cause of all the world's problems is white racism. They began the feminization and multiculturalization of America. Older listeners may remember how they screamed and moaned about McCarthyism back at that time. Witch hunt, they whined. Anti-Semitism. In fact, they still moan about it every time they have a chance. Hollywood blacklist, oy vey. You know, if it hadn't been for McCarthyism making them keep their heads down a bit, they would have done an even worse wrecking job on America. God, how I wish we had killed the whole bunch of them back in the 1960s instead of spending all our time trying to figure out what they were up to. Think how many of our own people could have avoided having their lives ruined. Think how much better off America and the world would be today. But of course, we didn't kill them, even if we had figured out exactly what they were up to in the 1960s. We didn't have the means to oppose them effectively. They had the mass media just as much in their hands then as now. They had half the government secretly helping them with their wrecking job, and the other half was too afraid of being tarred as anti-Semitic to oppose them. So here we are today. The United States is still rich and prosperous, primarily because the groundwork for our prosperity was laid before 1960. The building of an enormously productive agricultural enterprise, for one thing, and the beginning of the microelectronics revolution based on the work of the late William Shockley and his colleagues, for another thing. With our wealth and our technological head start, we were able to equip our armed forces with high-tech weaponry that permit us today to destroy any country which lacks such weapons, even if man for man, their soldiers are better fighters than ours. Of course, there's more to a military operation such as our destruction of Serbia than the fact that we have high-tech weapons and the Serbs don't. There's the fact that the Jews could count on their man, Boris Yeltsin, not to provide any Russian assistance to the Serbs, not even to let them have any modern air defense missiles while we were bombing Serbia. Well, at least they can count on Yeltsin when he's sober and has Boris Abramovich Berezovsky at his side to whisper instructions in his ear. Admittedly, that's not a perfect system, and it becomes a bit shaky at times, as when those Russian troops showed up unexpectedly at the airport in Pristina ahead of NATO last week and refused to budge. I think that we can attribute that to Yeltsin's need to bolster his image with the Russian people. He doesn't want it to be too obvious that he's the Jews' lapdog. So he throws a tantrum now and then and pretends to be refusing to cooperate. That sort of little league defiance goes over well with the Russian public. But on really substantive matters, he does what he's told. Even the Russian troops at the Pristina airport, however, caused his masters to reveal their hand a bit. They had to reprimand Yeltsin and tell him to behave himself, or there would be no more handouts from the West. Last Sunday, Tony Blair's defense secretary, George Robertson, said on BBC television that if Yeltsin continued to act up, then the world's financial bosses might decide to withhold his allowance when they meet in Cologne next week. And of course, they're already dangling the promise of loans in front of the Serbs in an effort to gain the same sort of control through corruption over Serbia that they have over Russia. To a large degree, it's a similar sort of corruption which holds NATO together and allows people like Madeleine Albright to manipulate it. In some cases, they have arranged to have a Gentile member of their New World Order gang running things. Tony Blair, for example, is a corrupt, trendy, ambitious little jack-in-the-box who is sort of a British version of Bill Clinton and really is counting on being allowed to be one of the owners of the New World Order's global plantation after the rest of the pieces are in place. In other cases, they have simply managed to keep genuine patriots away from the centers of power and keep men or women they can deal with in charge. Whenever a nationalist anywhere begins attracting enough votes to be considered dangerous, they unleash all of their trained media hounds on him and begin supporting his rivals. So far, that has been sufficient. That's why they love democracy so much and insist on it as the form of government everywhere. It's so easy to manipulate most voters with the mass media. In summary, the enemies of our people base their power on three things. First, and by far the most important, is their control of the mass media. Even in countries where they don't actually own the major newspapers and the television stations and control the content and slant of news programs, the Jews are able to extend their influence through the entertainment media. Most of the countries in the world, certainly every country in Europe, receives much of its entertainment from Hollywood. And everything which comes from Hollywood contains the Jews' spiritual poison. They're sometimes subtle and sometimes not at all subtle propaganda for equality and multiculturalism and racial mixing and feminism and passivity and white guilt and surrender. It was Jewish entertainment from Hollywood as much as anything else which destroyed South Africa. Until 1977, there was no television entertainment in South Africa because the white apartheid government there, fearing its subversive influence, would not permit it. The government finally gave in to the pressure in 1977 and permitted commercial television broadcasting. And it took just 16 years of television viewing, much of the material coming from Hollywood, for white South Africans to have enough Jewish spiritual poison pumped into them so that they could be persuaded to vote for mass white suicide in 1993. Most of them still haven't figured out what happened to them. The second element in the Jews' power base is money. They have an uncanny drive and ability to acquire money, an inherited drive and ability, I believe, and what is at least as important, an understanding of how to use money to buy power and a willingness to do it. There are many very wealthy Gentiles, of course, men whose wealth in the past was based in land and these days is based primarily in enterprise. Carnegie, Ford, Gates. But there still is a special relationship between Jews and money. Whenever you see a breakdown of wealth according to ethnicity or religion, you will see the Jews at the top of the list. Why is it that Jews never go into farming, for example? Did you ever in your life meet a Jewish farmer or even hear of one? Why do they all want to be lawyers or merchants, or lacking that, cosmetic surgeons or psychiatrists? They do have an instinct for money. You begin reading a news story about some huge Medicare swindle broken up by the FBI that has bilked the government of hundreds of millions of dollars, or some crooked telemarketing scheme that has robbed thousands of retirees of their life savings, or some Wall Street insider trading racket that has raked in billions of illicit dollars. And even before you get to the names of those who were arrested, you can guess what those names will be. Boesky, Levine, Goldblatt, Kaplan, Milken, Cohen, and the like. The third element in their power base is organization. Lock any three Jews in a room together, and within a week, they will have formed six different Jewish organizations. Look in the Yellow Pages or in the Encyclopedia of Organizations, which you can find in nearly every library. Count the number of specifically Jewish organizations listed and compare that with the number of, say, Lutheran or Baptist organizations and with the percentages of these groups in the population. You'll find that the Jews have a far larger number of organizations per capita than any other ethnic or religious group. Some of these organizations focus on the Jewish community itself, on maintaining a high level of Jewish self-consciousness, a high level of ethnic identity, and others focus on applying organized pressure to the Gentile community. These organizations allow the Jews to use their small numbers much more effectively. And the Jews support these organizations. They understand that in organization lies strength, which is something it would behoove our people to learn. Jews not only put their money into Jewish organizations, they use it in conjunction with their mass media to determine the outcome of the electoral process. A dirty little secret which every politician in Washington knows, but which no one is supposed to talk about, is that Jewish money is the key to winning elections. Approximately a quarter of all the money donated to Republican political candidates comes from the 2.5% of the U.S. population which is Jewish. For Democratic candidates, approximately 60% of the money comes from Jews. Amazing, isn't it? Anyway, it helps us to understand why the majority of Bill Clinton's appointments to ambassadorships, to cabinet posts, to the Supreme Court, and to other high government positions have gone to the Jewish minority. And of course, it's not just individual bribery or just political campaigns that the Jews' money is used for. And it's not just their money. When Madeleine Albright was running around from one country to another during the bombing of Serbia, bribing the various political leaders to keep them from responding to public demand and pulling out of NATO, it wasn't her personal money she was promising them. It was our money, our taxes. So that's the essence. Media, money, and organization. That's what makes up the apparatus of power. That's what allows a tiny minority to control the majority and to wreck nations and to commit genocide and get away with it and to aspire to total world domination under the aegis of the New World Order. There's more to it, of course. There's the unique inner nature of the Jews. I've just described for you the external apparatus. It's the apparatus they use to control the Clinton administration and more generally to control America. And with a few modifications, it's the apparatus they plan to use to acquire total world domination. It is adapted especially to the control of democracies. But whenever they encounter a country which is insufficiently democratic to be controlled by propaganda and bribery, then they use bombs to soften things up to the point that their style of controlled democracy can prevail. What has happened and is happening to Serbia is a perfect example. Get rid of Milosevic and choose a politician acceptable to us as your leader, or you will freeze in the dark this winter. As I said before, this system of the Jews, although it has been successful so far to a large extent, is a bit shaky, like any highly leveraged system. There are several things which can go wrong with it, several things which provide hope for us. In some of the countries where the habit of democracy has not sapped the strength of the people as much as it has in the West, in Serbia, say, or even more hopefully in Russia, there remains the possibility of nationalist resurgence. Perhaps Slobodan Milosevic is a nationalist, but there are other political leaders in Serbia who are far more nationalist than he. 2 weeks ago, the Serb Radical Party, under Serbian Deputy Prime Minister Vojislav Šešelj, resigned their parliamentary positions and vowed to carry on the fight for Serb freedom by other means when Milosevic caved in. Let's hope that they do, and do so effectively. And within the next year, we may see a really dramatic move toward nationalism in Russia. And what the Jews have done to Serbia may make a nationalist victory in Russia more likely. Everywhere, there will be a much greater incentive than before to acquire or produce weapons of mass destruction. Little countries certainly understand now, if they didn't before, that if they want to retain their freedom, they must have some way of fighting back against NATO, or whatever other guise the New World Order may appear in when it tells them how to run their internal affairs. Since they can't hope to match America's high-tech conventional weapons, they will turn to unconventional weapons. The threat of massive retaliation by the United States eventually will cease to be an effective deterrent. When a small country with a genuine nationalist leader has its back to the wall and is threatened with conquest, it may do whatever it must to punish the aggressor. And as the number of small countries which have learned to hate and fear America grows, it may be difficult for the folks in the CIA to figure out which one of them has unleashed an unconventional weapon of mass destruction on the United States. And believe me, that's coming. What Madeleine Albright and her pals have done to Serbia guarantees it. The bright side of that is that it will do Americans good to freeze in the dark a bit themselves. It will weed out a lot of those who voted for Clinton, and it will strengthen the spines of the rest. Anyway, while we're waiting for that just retribution to strike, what we must do is continue building our means to reach all our people. We must continue building our media of communication, building our organizational strength, building our financial strength. As things are now, it will take a long time, too long, for us to build our media or our organizational strength or our financial strength to the point where we can compete effectively with the Jews. But you know, things are not likely to remain as they are. Certainly not as likely as before the Clinton government's recent campaign of mass murder against the Serbs. Thanks for being with me again today.